Welcome to Abuelas en Acción, a podcast for our common good. I am Dr. Rosemary Celaya Alston, and I'm here with my co-host, Marie Dahlstrom. Today, we are talking about the political power of women. In the 2018-2020 election, we saw a record number of women elected to public office. However, women are still underrepresented at the top levels of our civic, political, and business enterprises. Studies have shown that female leadership can improve both productivity and equity in an organization. New York Times columnist Nicholas Kristof wrote, and I quote, What the pandemic reveals about the male ego. Why are the rates of coronavirus deaths far lower in many female-led countries? We are pleased to welcome today Tierra Stewart from Ignite National. Tierra has over 9 years of experience in community organizing, youth development, and nonprofit work. She currently serves as the National Fellowship Program Director with Ignite National, a nonpartisan 501c3 organization that is a movement of young women who are ready and eager to become the next generation of political leaders. Before joining Ignite, Tierra served as a program manager at After School's All-Stars, designing and implementing comprehensive after-school programs in Washington, D.C., addressing the school-to-prison pipeline. Tierra studied political science at Ohio University. During that time, she orchestrated numerous community events to raise awareness and resources for homeless youth in Columbus, Ohio. For this work, Representative Ann Gonzalez of Ohio State Legislature recognized Tierra as one of Ohio's most exceptional young citizens and future leaders. More recently, Tierra received the 40 Under 40 Under Honoree 2019 Award for her leadership and contributions to D.C., Maryland, and Virginia communities, and is a recent mom with a seventh-month-old baby. Welcome, Tierra.
Hi, thank you for having me. Super excited to be here.
We are excited to talk with you today, both Marie and I. Please tell us about a defining moment in your life.
That is such a great question. And to give you the full picture, I just want to take you back to the field that I'm currently working in, which is this very complex arena of politics. And I always like to say that I didn't choose to work in this field. Actually, if I had it my way, I wouldn't be in politics at all because I really can't stand it. But I realized that I had no choice. And I had many convictions about the way of the world. And how I like to illustrate this is that I was cursed with sight, seeing the socially induced misery that so many around the world are subjected to doesn't really allow me to only think of myself and my own self-achievement. So no matter what I would accomplish or gain, I would never be happy until my people are happy. And if I shall, and what I like to say, if I shall find my freedom, it is my duty to also set my people free. And so for my love for community, my love for freedom and advancement of humans is what was written over my heart since conception. And so I set out to work in education first. I needed to identify the problems. And were those findings very great? And just my journey and working in education in Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, and just seeing the disparities and still the modern day segregation in the education that was provided to Black people compared to across the river. And when people would think about Washington, D.C., they would think about the White House, the monuments, the Capitol, all the museums, all these free resources. But me living in this place and understanding a true disparity and how with people coming in and redeveloping the land and forgetting to reinvest into the people and starting to push out people who was native to the land. And then also working in a system where almost across the board, all the young children were at proficient or below basic on a standardized test. It just didn't make sense to me. By the time that they would get to ninth grade, 40% of them would drop off. And I understand that this was a system that was set up for my people to fail, and having the understanding on how we can cut back on funds for education, yet invest resources into private prisons. That told me what they were trying to do. To young people. And a very defining moment for me is when one of my young people said to me, "Miss T, did you know that by the third grade, they're preparing our jail cells?" When this young man said that to me, my entire heart dropped. It's not that I had already known that statistic, but the fact that he knew that, a middle school student, and he would recite that to me, that was very telling. It's not that we know what's happening. Our young people know what's happening. Our young people see what's happening. And it's not that they are not engaged with the process, it's being able to identify what they can do about it. And so I realized at that moment, and working in after school programs and creating these and designing these comprehensive after school programs for young people in order for them to find their voice, in order for them to establish an idea and imagine what they could be and more than what the four walls around them that they were subjected to. I'm talking about young people who were born into homelessness and had generational homelessness. So all they knew was homelessness. I knew that the real change was at the roots. And the roots was systems. And so I had to continue my work at a systems level. So I was turned off from politics initially because of the corruption. And I didn't see where I could fit in. I didn't see how one could go into that field and not get your hands dirty. And then AOC happened and every hair on my body stood up. That moment when she won the primary against the incumbent, I knew. And not only that, without big PAC money, without all these big endorsements, but just the sweat equity of walking door to door in her community and being a citizen, one who was born and raised in her community, and establishing that trust of the community to get record number of people to show up who hadn't even been registered to vote in the past, I knew it was time to get involved with the process to cause disruption. And like my colleague Rai taught me, it was time to be okay with being an imposter. If you feel like an imposter to your work, that means you are not conforming, but you are there to transform. And so Ignite aligned with this new calling in my life, and then training young women to run for public offices, I had to pick up the phone, and the next steps was to get them to see that they needed me on the team, that in fact, that it was a direct order from the universe. So I also have recently launched my own leadership platform called Lead the Way, where we're going to be training youth and adults to lead with light. And ultimately, I knew that I couldn't fix every issue about the way of the world, but if I could be in alignment with everyone else's frustration or passion, and if I could pour into them, then they could go back and pour into the world. And so I had to shift my idea of leadership from being a person who directly makes that impact to being a person who can pour into people or plant seeds or pour water on seeds that currently already exist and create a platform, create space to amplify the voices. Because like I said before, our young people know the issues in the way of the world. They're just waiting for someone to give them the opportunity to lead. And that was, I hope I illustrated that defining moment for you all very well.
Oh, wow. You did that and then some, Tiara. You did that and then some. Your words are so true and they're so important. You led me into the second question about Ignite, but why is this work so important, especially now during these challenging times in our country?
And I think that this is such a great question. And as someone who's not only Black, but have spent a lot of time just trying to understand history and trying to understand these pathways that my ancestors paved for me, and trying to understand why do people go out and protest, and why do people lobby, and why do people need to go talk to the congressman and let them know here's our agenda. And it comes down to a point where I feel like in my heart, I'm tired of begging begging people for the crumbs that falls off the master's table. I'm tired of asking people for things that I know me, myself, I can do for my community. And when I look up at the makeup of leadership in this country, it's not a true representation of the people in this country. And to understand what it means to be in office and have that type of power making decision seat is you're the one and you have the power to represent your constituents, to elevate their voices, to create policy that impacts their everyday life. And if I'm going to someone who wasn't there in the first place to even represent me, my issues, or my community, and I'm asking them to do this for my people, that's literally, to me, that's like trying to mix water with oil. It just does not mix. And so with that understanding, I know that either me, myself, I need to be in that see, or I need someone who is of my people and for my people and by my people. And so that it is not that I have to beg them. They go into that space already knowing what they need to do. And then they include the voices of their people. And so essentially what we see happening in America today, we see representation of constituents that doesn't represent the larger population and needs and the issues of our communities. And so the only way that we can change that is by changing the people who are in office. And when we think about women's representation in this country, less than 23% of our leadership in this country are women. And so when we think about the type of issues that we deal with, the lack of representation coincides with that, to the point if a woman should receive maternity leave and how long it should be, all these different issues are directly impacted by people who are put in these positions to enact law that impact our everyday lives. And so if we would shift the way resources are reallocated into our community, the only way we can do that is by shifting the people in those seats. And we have the right to, one, elect that person who's in our seats. And what we've seen throughout time is that they try to, it's the lack of information and access of information in our communities. And not only that, to make it harder for us to have access to really participate in this democracy. So we can socialize our people around the importance of not only politics, because politics is very personal, and then also the importance of being in those seats, and then the importance of voting and supporting those people who are representing your community. Communities across this country will shift. The problem that we have is because politics is very dirty. And a lot of times you see the discrepancies of politics and money. And so if you don't have the money, that also limits the access to information you can get out to communities. And so I honestly will say that the reason why the work that Ignite is doing is so important, because we're doing this at every level. Not only are we socially socializing the importance of getting civically engaged, we're also training young women to run for office and then connecting them to a like-minded community and support. Because when you're going into spaces that weren't created for you, the journey of that will be so much more harder. And that's why what we're doing is so important. And we are going to continue to deal with the same issues that we have in this country until people realize, not only tell people to vote, but we got to run for office. We got to stop asking of people what we can do for ourselves. And we can mobilize our community and get the support from our communities and be in those power making decision seats and create the policy that our communities deserve.
So if I were to ask you, and I know that this is going to narrow your vision here a little bit, if you were to name one or two priority issues for Generation Z women, what would those two priorities be, Tierra?
Well, Gen Z, and I can speak specifically to Gen Z women and what they prioritize. If we actually, let's look at this pre-COVID, really focusing on mass shootings, climate change, education, and racial inequality. And then post-COVID is healthcare, is jobs, is mass shootings, is racial inequity. And so you also see that Gen Z leaning more towards blue Democrats. But I think the biggest priority and what I've seen and based off our studies and our findings is definitely between racial inequity and inequality in healthcare, two of the biggest issues that they care about.
You know, Tierra, thank you for sharing to sharing your who you are and why you do the work you do and the work of Ignite. It is very, very important, and it means a lot. I wanted to just, I was thinking about this quote as you were talking about not having, that politics wouldn't have been your number one choice as a field to get into. And I think that is true for so many of us. But we have seen that the only way to impact change is to be a part of it and to get into the politics. Dolores Huerta, a well-known community activist and farm worker rights activist, has said, "Every moment is an organizing opportunity, every person a potential activist, and every minute a chance to change the world." And I love how you just presented how challenging it was for you to do this, but you knew you had no other option. And I really hope that our listeners can be inspired by that, because we hear people talk so much about, you know, it's so sad, it's so hard. We see the health disparities. We see, you know, what's happening in terms of people being exposed to air pollution and to dirty water and being displaced, but they don't know what to do. Just jump in, do it. Don't just stay with how awful it is, because we need all of us. And thank goodness for the work that you're doing. Can you talk for a moment about political power of women? How is it that women make such an impact? Why is it important to get them into office?
Well, one, I just want to quickly share an African proverb, which is, when women lead, streams run uphill.
I love it. I love it.
And as women, not only, and I'm just going to speak to today and what we see, and of course, to my community as a Black woman, a lot of Black women not are the head. And I know this is the same for the Hispanic community as well. A lot of Black women are the leaders of their household, and a lot of times not only providing, but they're also taking care of their children and just making things happen. And when you have, as women who not only can birth children, but pay the bills and cook the meals and make sure the children are educated and have everything that they need to thrive. Like, from every single point and aspect, you have a basic understanding of what's needed in order to survive, and then to get from the survival state, but then to also thrive. And to keep that, And I'm trying to figure out how to turn off my phone. I knew because it's my birthday.
Well, and we are so honored that you are here on your birthday with us, Tiara. Happy birthday.
Thank you. But to keep such perspectives, and it's all about angles. And what I like to say is, women have a 360 degree angle compared to men, who might be 90 degrees or might not be able to see it from all perspectives. And to keep that type of lens out of these places that are created and constructed to create policy that really illustrates how we're going to, or really impacts our everyday lives, from everything to the quality of the water that runs out of our faucets, to the quality of the streets that we have to drive on, to whether or not we're going to give, make the children have to take public transportation to school or get them their own busing systems. Like, so many different things, so many different decisions are being made. And if the only people you have around the table are white older men who have this very limited perspective about the way of the world and the people of whom we're going to impact, then I don't really need to illustrate from you. You just get up, walk out your house, and look around your community, and you're going to see how that impacts us. And so women getting civically engaged this is, it really is going to transform. It's going to transform the country that we know, but also the world of which we contribute to, and that we hope that will still be here years to come for our offspring to enjoy. And the way that things are looking is the greed is going to really devour and distort our communities, because right now what we see in leadership is more about making a profit than serving the people and serving our earth that has to keep thriving in order to keep humans alive. And the only way I see that shifting is by getting people with 360 degree angle perspectives at that table, so we can really get about the business of serving humanity.
Oh, Tiara, I get goose pimples listening to you talk, because it gives me such hope that we can do this, but we have to get involved. We have to ensure that all of us are represented and that our voices are heard, because we decide to distribute resources differently. We decide that we want to keep our families safe, and we want to keep our earth, our global communities. We want to, we need to do what we can to thrive. So thank you for that. Well, you know, we have one last question for you, because one of the questions that we always ask on our podcast, because of course we are grandmothers, abuelas en acción, and we would like to know and give families some ideas on how to build civic engagement. I mean, civic engagement, you did a nice job of framing it and defining it, because it sounds kind of complex, but it really isn't. And we do know then in the past number of years, as our politics have been left to primarily older white males, that our civic participation has gone down, and so many people have felt like, what is the use? There's nothing I can do to change anything in my community. But we're going to push back on that. You have demonstrated that we can make a difference. What can we all do to build civic participation and civic engagement of our daughters and granddaughters?
And this is such a beautiful question. I really just want to reemphasize this, because this is so, so, so important. And I'm going to keep saying it, and I'm going to keep holding this flag until, honestly, until the Lord takes my last breath and take me to the next life. But in order to influence the public policy making process, we ordinary citizens must engage as an individual or gather with other ordinary citizens in collaboration. For you to run for office, it's just an appointment process where you can decide how resources are reallocated back off the agenda of that commission or board. That can be a first step. And then when those little people come around who are from your community and want to make a difference and need your support to run for office, and you might not have it, you may have never even registered to vote, it is your duty to get up and go register to vote and figure out how to go cast that vote for that person who's trying so hard to not just sit at the table and complain about the way of the world, but to actually do something about it. It's going to take all of us, but it's going to start at the kitchen table. It's going to start in our conversations and our understanding of history and how it's still relevant and prevalent in this today's society. And then it's going to start with gathering and supporting each other, because like I said earlier, when all of us gather, louder is the declaration. And your issues of the brown community, the black community, the poor white community, all of our issues are the same, but this country tries to make us think that we are so different in order to keep us fighting amongst ourselves and unable to come together for a common good. But once we can realize that our issues are the same and actually come together, greater will be the impact of our work. But we won't know that until we understand the history of this country. And so the first step you should go and do is get educated on our history. And like I said, type in your search browser, boards and commissions, hundreds of boards and commissions in all communities across the country, and see where you can serve on an appointed seat. And that's just some basic first steps you can take. And then go register to vote and know who's on the ballot and vote for those people who are trying to fight for your interests and for the liberation of your people.
I think that's our summary, Marie.
Oh, my. my gosh. That was beautiful. Thank you, Tiara. Rosemary, did you have any final thoughts?
I mean, I could talk for another hour with this woman. I just want to sign up as to where I can vote for her. I really appreciated, you said many, many things, but what hit me, like the goosebumps that Maria said hit her, was the terminology that you used, socially induced misery. Mm-hmm. And looking at this from a 360 angle perspective, mm-hmm. I think those were key takeaways.
Yes.
With everything that you had to say in terms of the plate, that anyone could take from, but we don't know our history. You are so right, Tiara. We're still learning about it. Mm-hmm. And if we don't know that, then we don't have a platform in terms of why we're still at the same, at the back of the line.
Absolutely.
And we so appreciate your strong commitment and your passion and your leadership qualities in being out there. We have hope. Right, Marie?
We absolutely do, Tiara. And again, we wish you a blessed birthday. We are so honored that you spent time with us today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. Please subscribe to our podcast on Buzzsprout, Apple, and Spotify. And we appreciate your reviews. We look forward to having you next time with us on Abuelas en Acción. Gracias.